Hello again, this is Reset, 40 is the New Happy, a podcast series that shares stories of our second acts in life. Although in this case of Manchester native John Clayton, his play has had more than one intermission. His work as a much-loved columnist for the Union Leader ran for 20 years. The prolific writer had enough stories in him to also fill 7 books and 7 years worth of hosting New Hampshire Crossroads on New Hampshire Public Television. For a short time, he became a maritime vagabond before serving the New Hampshire Hospital Association as its vice president of communications. And just earlier in 2015, John reinvented himself again and became executive director of the Manchester Historic Association, the job he probably would do for free. Now, John, I don't want to give you or bosses any ideas, but I suppose if you and Colleen were to hit Powerball tonight, you probably would still do the job anyway because it is a labor of love.
You hit it exactly right, Michael. I actually put my hand over my face when I cashed the check. It's embarrassing that I'm being paid to do something that is so much fun and so much second nature to me. I'm a Manchester guy, and I've always revered and loved telling the stories about Manchester's history. And now in this post as executive director of the Manchester Historic Association, it's my full-time job.
Just walking through the museum, I've never been here before, I'm ashamed to say, but I can tell you love it because you were giving me a tour and you probably didn't realize it.
I didn't. Among our newest exhibits is what we call the Manchester Wall of Fame. It's an interactive display with 48 large photographic panels in which we celebrate the 48 people that we think, you know, are deserving of recognition on that wall. It was not an easy process. You know, we've got 11,000 years of recorded history in Manchester, so the culling process was interesting. It was a distillation, really, to come down to that 48, but it's a great educational tool, and it celebrates the people of Manchester, which is what I want my tenure here to be all about.
All right, so you had a good job with the New Hampshire Hospital Association, decent hours, good pay. How did you sell leaving to your wife?
The leaving part was a very organic thing that she completely understood. My father-in-law passed away in January, and I was asked to write his obituary, which I did. And I was asked to write and deliver his eulogy, which I did as well. And quite honestly, it was the first time in 3.5 years in which I'd written anything that mattered to me. And I knew that that had to change. I went to Colleen after having such feedback from people at his funeral, at some other big public events I did about people missing my column. They missed seeing me around town. And so I went to Colleen and said, would you mind if I quit my job? And she said, I've been waiting a year if you'd ask me that. So I left. Absolute leap of faith. I had nothing lined up. I was going to do another book. I was going to try to find other avenues for writing about Manchester. And I got a call that the Manchester Historic Association was looking for an ED. It was karma. It was kismet. It was following your bliss, whatever you want to call it. The door opened, and I jumped through before anybody could close it on me.
Well, that's what this series is all about, which makes you such a great subject. All right, let's back up just a little bit. Many people know that you took a sabbatical at sea. What did you learn about yourself during your time away, and how long were you out of the workforce?
I was never technically out of the workforce because before I left, I made an arrangement with the Union Leader that I would continue to write a column every week on a freelance basis. But I didn't have to be in the office. I didn't have to go over to William Loeb Drive. And so people may not have known it, but I was writing my column on the bow of a boat in the Bahamas. And yes, I know everybody feels sorry for me. But what I found is that I could still work regardless of where in the world I was because technology's changed so much. You know, I don't know how Columbus did it without an iPhone and a Mac notebook because those two tools enabled me to stay in touch. I'd fly back every 6 weeks or so to find stuff to write about, do some book signings. But we were maritime vagabonds. In fact, our boat was named Gypsies in the Palace, which is a Jimmy Buffett song. So vagabonds is an absolute perfect choice of words. So I was connected, but I was able to be away at the same time. And that 3-year process was a real battery charger for me. Why did I do it? The people who depended on me didn't need me anymore. My folks had passed away. My daughter graduated from college, had a great job in Manhattan. So it was a time when Colleen and I could say, you know what? Everybody says you should do it before you're too old to do it. We did.
All right. So how did you handle not being in the public eye on a nearly daily basis as you stepped out of the spotlight for those 3 years and even with the Hospital Association?
Yeah, I was the spokesman for a group that didn't want to be quoted, didn't want to be in the paper, because how can you explain the $600 Band-Aid? So that was hard. And you know, and I know, that there is a rush associated with work in the media. I can't tell you how jazzed I was to wake up on a Monday morning and see my picture on the front page of the paper was something that I had invested a lot of time and energy and emotion into writing. So yeah, there was absolutely withdrawal. And it's kind of nice to be back in the paper and back on TV and back on WZID or WTPL or anybody that will have me, because yeah, that media buzz is something it's hard to get over.
And we read you on the same web service, Manchester Inklink, that this podcast appears. So you still have your fingers in that aspect of your world.
I do. My friend Carol Rubidoux has been awesome in terms of allowing me to have that forum in which I can continue to write the columns about the city that I love and serve. So yeah, kudos to Carol for making me a fixture back in people's minds on Monday morning.
All right, so you were raised here, of course. You have several siblings along with nieces and nephews. Knowing that staying local limits one's options, did you ever think about leaving New Hampshire as the print world began its decline along with the economy?
Absolutely. You know, I'm a Manchester kid, and in my generation, what most people wanted out of Manchester was themselves. And that was a fact of life. You know, the mills were dead-end jobs. Teachers would threaten us, the stigma of working in the mills. If you don't do your homework, you're going to wind up working in the mills. And so, yeah, I had aspirations to work elsewhere. I wanted to be a sports writer. I would love to have written for Sports Illustrated. But ultimately, after spending a year in Great Britain on a journalism fellowship, I was at the University of Wales in Cardiff, I realized that it was all about coming home. When I was in college at Northeastern University, I covered a plane crash at Logan Airport. And what I didn't know as we sped down to the airport from Lowell was that the plane had come from Manchester and crashed at Logan, and 98 people were killed. And when I found out that so many people from my hometown were there, it was a different task. Writing about it wasn't an impersonal journalistic thing. It was very personal, because ultimately I came to know that I knew five people who died on that flight. And that mattered to me. And so it was that point that I made the decision that I wanted to stay here and write about this place and these people that I know and love.
All right, so let's take you back to 1991. You have a choice. This is just a hypothetical. You have a choice to take the job that you did as its premier columnist for the Union Leader, or you have a job heading the Manchester Historic Association. What would the choice have been in 1991, do you think?
In 1991, I would tell you that I was absolutely unqualified to hold this position. Essentially, I had 25 years of graduate school working at the Union Leader, and my thesis was Manchester. I wrote about this place and discovered nuances and subtleties about it that I would not have known when I was 38 years old in 1991. So that was a spectacular preparation for this job, and that my focus was Manchester, and I think I'm far better suited for it now than I would have been back then.
It is scary changing jobs and careers in midlife, so offer a little advice and encouragement to those looking to believe in themselves as you did by taking that leap. I mean, you left the hospital job with nothing to go to. That is scary.
It is, and it was, and I think I'm better for having done it. Yeah, it sounds corny. You know, it sounds like I'm going back to Haight-Ashbury in 1967 in San Francisco, but you have to follow your bliss. And I just was not satisfied. The job I had was rewarding in many ways, in that I really loved the people I worked with. And there's a buzz at being around the State House as well. People were asking me about running for governor, which is absurd on its surface and every other level. But that made me start thinking about other opportunities. What else can I do? And political career is nothing that I aspired to, but I never thought I'd do television. I never thought I'd do radio. I'm a newspaper guy, and yet all these opportunities presented themselves. So I think if you have the faith in yourself and know that you can find a way, that you need to take it. Take that path, even though you don't know where it's going. You know, let's quote Robert Frost. I took the one not taken, and look where I land.
And final question, we're here at the beautiful museum that has been put together. Talk about the presidential primary exhibit. I think you're probably still looking for some memorabilia to place into your exhibit.
We are. You know, at the risk of offending people in other communities around New Hampshire, we believe that Manchester is really the crucible for the presidential primary. Yes, you know, Portsmouth, Nashville, Concord, that's all well and good, but we think this is it because it's the media center with the union leader, MUR. It's the airport. There are a lot of reasons. So we're seeking photographs dating back to the 1950s of Manchester people interacting with presidential candidates. This is an intimate process here in the city, and so we think by shining an intensely focused light on Manchester's role in the primary, we can reveal a lot about what this process is about.
And how would people get in touch with you to perhaps let you borrow some of that memorabilia?
Oh, they've been gracious so far, and we're hoping for more. 622-7531 is the phone number. The email is history@manchesterhistoric.org, or you can come to the Milliard Museum and knock on the door. I'll be happy to take them off your hands.
40 is the new happy, John Clayton. Thanks.
Thank you, Michael.